Welcome back, baseball family. We are excited to do another one of our interviews. We have Patrick Montgomery here with us today. We're going to get you his bio here in just a moment. But first things first, he's going to get caught in a rundown just like everybody else.
Let's go.
Welcome to the show, Patrick. What is your quest?
My quest is to enjoy baseball, tell it, and shoot below a 90 every round of golf.
Fabulous.
That's a solid quest there at the end. I would never be able to do that.
No.
Okay, next question. What is your favorite color?
Blue. As you can tell behind me, I love any shade of blue. Coast Guard blue, Savannah blue, whatever it is.
That's awesome. Now, we talked about this earlier, but you, sir, have excellent taste in baseball. And
you as well, sir.
Thank you. If the Yankees were a beverage, in your opinion, what would they be?
Well, I would normally say coffee, because coffee is an everyday quality luxury item. So actually, upon further thought, yes, I'll say coffee. It's always there. Nice. It's there first thing in the morning. You can have it with lunch. Heck, even for dinner after dessert. It's there all the time, and it's always excellent.
I love that.
Okay, I have a controversial take on this, but I want to know what you think about this. Is Babe Ruth overly romanticized?
No.
Oh, here we go.
I think he's underrated still.
Yes.
100 years later, underrated?
Take that, Brad.
Well, you have to realize Babe Ruth the person. Like, you have the player stuff, right, which is amazing. I mean, people go, oh, you didn't face the all-around best with the African-Americans and the Latins and everything else. Absolutely, that is true. But you also didn't have the nutrition, the weightlifting, the coaching, the travel. I mean, they have to travel by train and car, bus, whatever. Nowadays, they're luxury airliners and everything's done for them. So I think it's a wash. I think the great players yesterday are great today. And I mean, imagine Babe Ruth with the weightlifting and nutrition and the good coaching. I think he would be just as good.
I think it's tough because it's like that. I've heard that argument a ton. Like, imagine if he had a weight trainer and everything in the nutrition. Like, but would he have, though? Did he have the personality to go and hit the weight room and lay off the hot dogs for 6 months? You know,
who's to say that it's that tough. Is the way to go. I mean, Jose Canseco, great body, worked out all the time. The body breaks down. Mike Piazza, the body breaks down. Is being in that great shape necessarily good for baseball?
I think there's a balance that, you know, a lot of times, like a lot of guys talked about, like, pitchers don't lift heavy because you're going to decrease your range of motion. Well, not if you stretch, you know. I think Mickey Mantle, the key is stretching.
Mickey Mantle never lifted weights, right? And he was
Griffey never lifted weights.
Yeah. Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. Lawrence Taylor. I mean, I know we're switching to football, but
right.
One of the strongest, fastest players ever never lifted a weight. So, but you're right. Like Otani does and Suzuki, they are big into stretching. They'll stretch for an hour or two at a time. So that is really the key. And I can't imagine Babe Ruth really being that flexible.
Put a hot dog. Reach.
Well, we can continue this argument for an hour, and I just love this conversation.
Absolutely.
All right, Brad.
Okay, so the last question is, if you could change anything about baseball right now, what would you change?
I would enforce a 10-man pitching staff. I hate just the revolving door of relievers. It slows the game down, and it just doesn't allow pitchers to pitch. It just teaches them to throw as hard as they can for an inning and get out. I think the premium should be at a starting pitcher that can go 7 innings, 8 innings, and I'd love to see baseball go back to that.
I
hadn't thought about that. I think it would help the strategy of the game a ton, too, especially like you talk about pitchers just go in there and throw 9-10 pitches as hard as you can, and then we'll pull you out. Like, no, pace yourself a little bit. Yeah. I think that I hadn't thought about that, but that's a great way to go. I like that.
Well, and strategize, too. Have you read David Cone's book, Full Count?
I have not, no.
Oh, it's magnificent. It's part really treatise good. On pitching. It's part biography, autobiography. It's wonderful.
Well, toward the end there, he wasn't throwing more than 92 usually. So, I mean, he knew how to meter himself out, and that's part of pitching.
That's right.
Yep.
All right, baseball family, when we come back, we're going to get into the rest of the main conversation with Patrick.
Welcome back, baseball family. Thank you for continuing to join us on this fantastic journey with Patrick Montgomery. We're going to get into his book, but first, let me tell you a little bit about him. He is an award-winning author of Baseball's Great Expectations, a veteran with 25 years of federal service, a member of both the Society of American Baseball Research, or SABRE, and the Major League Baseball Players Alumni Association. He is a fellow member with us of the Internet Baseball Writers Association of America, or the IBWAA. That's a lot. That's a mouthful. Got a lot going on for you.
He sees his deal, but it's fun.
That's right. So,
well, and that wasn't even all. There's more, but
there's plenty more. Yeah.
I was like, let's do. Your bio is incredible. It really is incredible. Yeah.
So, my first question for you is, what inspired the idea for this book?
It really goes back for me. Childhood, it was a staple. Baseball was a staple of my childhood. And it goes back to listening to the radio underneath the pillow because you don't want to get in trouble. And those players that I collected the cards for and I'd hear about, like so much, like from Phil Rizzuto, the Scooter, talking about them, and all of a sudden you stopped hearing about them. And what happened to them? What about these great players that should have been great that just, it didn't happen? What happened to them? So I've always wondered, I've always loved the stories of like the other side of the story. Because we all know what we're told, but there's so much more in there's so much more of things. So like David Clyde, the pitcher, like everyone compared him to Sandy Koufax and the great left-hander, the big hook, the fastball, and he literally graduated high school, and two or three weeks later, he's starting in the major leagues as a pitcher, and getting a telegram from Sandy Koufax pushing him a glove before his game. I mean, imagine being in high school, graduating than doing that. I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't think I would break. And this person didn't. He went out there and pitched a very good game, facing a lineup from the Twins of Ogilvy and Olivia and also Rod Carew and Larry Hissel. And he didn't fold. He pitched a great game. So it's those players I've always wondered about, like what happened to him. And players like Brian Milner. If you're a Blue Jays fan, you might know him, but this was a kid that graduated high school, and then the last game of the year was a all-star game for high school, and he wouldn't sign a contract because he wanted to get the all-star game in. So he plays the all-star game, walks off the field, goes in the clubhouse, and signs a major league contract, and literally the next day, he's in a major league ballpark and warming up to play in the major leagues. So less than 24 hours removed from his last high school game, he's in the major leagues on a major league roster. I mean, those stories like that I didn't hear about, and I wanted to know more about. And Brian Milner is one of those stories.
It's crazy. Like, I think about guys. Like, I think about a couple guys I played with in high school who got drafted out of high school, mm-hmm. and you know, they both elected to go to college. But I've thought about it a lot. Like, what if they had gone to gone straight to the minor leagues. Like, what if I had gotten drafted and chosen to go straight to the minor leagues as an 18-year-old kid who knows literally nothing about anything? Like, the minor leagues is one thing, but to go to the big leagues like that, that's crazy to me. That's
absolutely
bananas.
And he's the only player ever, only non-positional player to get drafted out of high school to go right to the major leagues ever.
Yeah.
And then there have been catchers from college that have gone right to the major leagues, but no catcher even has done that from high school. So
yeah,
a player like Brian Milner is amazing.
Yeah, that's the story. That's one of the stories that resonated most with me, because not only are you thrust from an 18-year-old who is just dreaming about playing in the Astrodome and doesn't want to sign anything because that's his opportunity. He grew up in the shadows of it, I think, is the words you use.
Absolutely.
Which is terrific writing, but then to be dropped, not just into your major league lineup the next couple of days, not just in the nine hole, which is where he ended up, but that he was behind the dish taking heat that he'd never seen before. It's crazy.
That's like learning to drive a go-kart thing, being in the Indy 500 the next day.
It really is. I went from, yeah. I can kind of relate to that because, like, as a high schooler, I only made it to JV, but one time in a scrimmage against the varsity, they had the varsity pitchers pitch against the varsity hitter, so they're pitching with the JV squad, and we had a shortstop who he got drafted. This is one of the guys who got drafted. He threw like 95. And the coach like pointed at me. He's like, get your gear on, you're catching. And everybody, like all the catchers came around, like, as I'm getting my gear on, hey, it's nice knowing you, man. You've been a great part of this team. And we love having you around. But we'll bury you behind home plate after you die, because none of us have ever seen this.
And what happened? Crazy. Did you handle it well?
I handled it well. I caught him. I did bruise my hand because I palmed one. But other than that, I caught everything in the pocket and did a surprising good job framing. I was impressed with myself. I'll tell you that. So
isn't that a great feeling?
It was a great feeling.
Well, the great thing about Brian Milner was when he got this a triple in his last game in the major leagues. I think it was actually the second to last bat that he had. And he huffs around first, second, gets a third, slides in, gets up, and the third base coach is like, hey, you know, look up. And everyone's giving him a standing ovation. Now, visiting crowd, this was, you know, for like an away game. And they're giving the catcher, a rookie, a standing ovation for his triple base hit. So, I don't know, being a rookie a couple days later out of high school, getting a standing ovation in a major league stadium, doesn't get any better than that at all.
Could hang it up right there.
Yeah. That's kind of how the story progresses. And it's a little bit, you know, sobering. I mean, it's a lot sobering. And my question is, how were these conversations during the book's preparatory stages and in the research of it? It sounds like you had some pretty difficult conversations with these guys.
It wasn't as difficult as you would think, because in time people soften up a little bit. We always want to remember the good stuff, like you and catching the kid that threw 95. I mean, you didn't get best JV, but you remember that time that you did that. And it's much like that with these players. Instead of focusing on the injuries and the bad stuff that happened to Brian Milner to keep him from major leagues down the line in the future, he remembers the triple and the standing ovation and the feeling that he had having a beer in the clubhouse afterward with the guys. Those are the things he talks about. And many of the players, I mean, I don't think I really had a bitter interview with anybody, because they were just excited to even have the opportunity to play Major League Baseball. And you see these players, the chance of making a Major League roster for even a day is well under 1%. It's like my daughter and I, she's a Saber person and took the analytics stuff, and she broke it down to be in the Major Leagues for 10 years and get the full 10 years in the Major Leagues to be vested. It's like 0.23024. So 0.23024 of 1%. So
whoa.
That's of 1%.
Sniff of that.
That's of 1%?
Yeah, 1%. So if then you can get a sniff of the major leagues, God bless them. I mean, it's an amazing opportunity, and I think they all realize that.
Oh yeah. That's amazing.
That makes a whole lot more sense too, with like, was the Brewers a couple of years ago did Lorenzo Cain a solid? Mm-hmm. He got like his 10 years and then they released him. Like, that makes that so much more significant. I knew it was a big deal, but man.
Yeah. But to get to the point, and that's like in my first book, The Splendid Six, players like David Wright, Ryan Zimmerman, Mark Reynolds, all those guys got to that point. So to have those six players from the same little hometown area get to that number is amazing. So that's the baseball miracle of The Splendid Six. I mean, to retro that, but that's kind of why these players are not bitter, because how can you get bitter when you're so graced?
So. Wow. That's great that you were able to have such humble conversations. I mean, it comes through in many of the pieces, these little vignettes you've written, that they're so humble. And Brian Milner was the one. I mean, the guy went on to teach Jorge Posada how to move from a position player to being a catcher.
Yes.
And to hear just how humble he is to take a guy like that. And I think you wrote in the book that he says, like, no, I just kind of helped. And there was a lot of other, you know, players and coaches. And it's like, shut up. Hello. You were the first guy to take him from where he was not a good fit and put him where he has now had this incredible career. Like, come on, Brian.
Well, he is extremely humble, but he made sure to let me know that during practice they would do the pop-up time drill.
Yeah.
And his times were better than his for the longest time. Then in time, Posada got as good or better. But he was proud to mention that his pop-up time was still there.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I keep that in my back pocket.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. Yeah. Was there a specific story through this whole thing that resonated with you the most that it was like, man, that one, like, it like really stuck with you?
The one that sticks to me the most is the first chapter that I wrote. It was the story of Brian Cole. This poor kid was compared to any Hall of Famer out there. Al Pujols said that this kid was the best ball player that he ever saw. CC Sabathia said that he was among the toughest hitters he ever faced. And he died tragically driving to his minor league team right after spring training. And by all accounts, he was a player that was to come up that year and make a huge noise in baseball and on New York City. And maybe could have, you know, challenged, you know, the Derek Jeter players and players like that and brought more attention to the Mets and helped them even have their own dynasty.
Wow. Yeah, that was a terribly sad. Again, many of these stories have a sober tone. But I think you've done a great job of I don't want to say resurrecting, but I don't have a better word, sort of the triumph underneath all of it. And how do you do that? Like, we're all writers here. Like, what?
It's kind of like what here? I said. Like, we all have what we're told, and then there's always more on the margin that you have to nibble at. And you keep nibbling at it, and you find more and more. With the Brian Cole story, there's a lot of things that I unearthed just by talking to family and friends of Brian Cole that was never published, never told. And sometimes, like, we see the shiny object and then we forget about it. And you have to go back to it. And it's been close to 20 years since Brian Cole died. And a lot of things happened and a lot of things developed and a lot of memories are kind of let go in time. And that's happened with the Brian Cole story. Even with the lawsuit with Ford, where they sued Ford over many, many years in a settlement, and they got a huge settlement. There was a lot of back and forth with the judge and a lot of crazy accusations from all parties, and that's in the book. And it kind of shows how big corporation can kind of go after the little man and all sorts of even social stratification issues that were all part of it. So that chapter was the most enjoyable and the one I had to edit the most because it was like 100 pages when I was done. So I had to get it down to a concise 45 pages.
No
and
big deal.
It hurt because it was so it was so so heart-wrenching.
Yeah, that's tough. Well, and you want to do a service to the family and to his memory and to the story itself, right? We're all beholden to the story we're telling as storytellers. That's our job, right? So
absolutely.
Yeah, that I can't imagine the difficulty of that. Wow.
What was your
go ahead, Brad.
I think you're going to ask me the same question. What was your process for picking players to highlight in this book?
It's kind of funny. As I'm talking to you, I have my notebook. You know, like when you start thinking about ideas for books, you take out your little notebook and you start doodling. And originally what I kind of wanted to do was make a lineup of all the best non-players that we never heard of, like the players that just, boom, disappeared or what happened to them. So I came up with a lineup, like a 27-man roster, kind of like a bench, the starting rotation. And I went through them, and the ones that I didn't want to have a negative, sad, bitter story. So I kind of went through the stories and I found ones that had silver linings and good stories. And then I kind of whittled it down. And if I'm fortunate they passed away, it was more difficult to find good information to use. But then sometimes it just goes to which ball players are actually wanting to talk to you and which family and friends and general managers you can get a hold of. Because I didn't want to just get the story from the player. I also wanted to get a kind of a calibration from the general managers that drafted them, or the front offices and the scouts, the family, the players that played with them. Because otherwise, it's just a one-sided story and you have to get the full composite. So if I could get a rich tapestry, then I did write about them.
Yeah, I mean, that's journalism 101, right?
Yeah.
Go talk to people around them. Yeah, I remember doing that assignment in college.
Yeah.
So, but that's the long answer. Like there was a player, Danny Goodwin, that was a catcher, and he was drafted back-to-back years number one. I mean, how's that happen?
Wow.
And you never heard of the guy. I mean, I never heard of him. And then I did research on him, and he's very happy today. I mean, he's perfectly happy. He has his own business and doesn't really want to talk about it. He's not somebody that wants to revisit it, which is fine, absolutely.
Yeah.
But I mean, the idea that number one overall in the country back to back years, it's mind-boggling.
That
is
crazy.
mind-boggling. I
Yeah.
wanted to move on really quick and talk about Ron Nietzsche. Nietzsche? Is that how you pronounce his name?
Nietzsche.
Nietzsche. Okay. Ron Nietzsche. So check this out, baseball family. Ron played one season in 1952 with Pittsburgh. He threw 54 and two-thirds innings in 9 starts across 12 games, 12 appearances. He recorded 31 strikeouts from the mound, and 27 of them came in one game.
Well, that was in the minor leagues that he had 27
Oh,
strikeouts.
okay.
But
I
I
was
mean,
like, wait a minute.
but he threw a perfect game. Not only is it perfect, but 27 batters struck out. 27 up, 27 down, 27
Oh,
strikeouts. I mean,
my word.
that will
I read
never
that
happen
wrong.
ever again. I mean, I don't care if you're playing a high school team and you're Nolan Ryan. It's not going to happen.
Somebody's going to get a piece of it. Yeah. Or somebody's going to get
Sooner
walked.
or later. But he was in the minor leagues and playing in the Carolina League back then, and 27 up, 27 down. Now, I did kind of, he kind of half-hearted mention that the catcher may have let a foul ball fall in so he'd get the chance to strike out the guy. But that
Oh,
was the
nice.
ninth inning, so the catcher knew what was going on, but he himself didn't know. When he walked off the field after the game, everyone's going crazy, and it's like, what's going on? They told him, it's like, is that a big deal? Like, it's never happened before in baseball history, any level. And so this man pretty much had a, that was his career, kind of more or less. And he's very proud of it. And he did have some tendonitis issues, torn labrum, they found out later on, but they didn't know how to address it back then.
Yeah.
So his career was pretty much done. But he tried for 5 or 6 more years to make it back, and he couldn't quite do it.
A true
Wow.
baseball fascist. I
Steve?
bet the final score of that game had to have been like 1-0. The defense was
I'm
asleep.
not quite sure, but yeah, I mean, it wasn't a blow up by any means, but he had bad stomach issues, he had ulcers like beyond belief,
Man.
and he wasn't feeling well in the dry warm up. And it's like, oh, I don't know if you want to play today. And there you went. He went out there and just killed it. So
That's
I love those
amazing.
stories. And
Yeah,
he
that is
actually
super
wasn't a
cool.
pitcher when he got signed, he was a first baseman. And because in high school he threw so hard he hurt a kid.
Oh.
He beamed him, so he promised himself that he would never pitch again. And the coach in the minor league said, "Well, have you thought about pitching?" He's like, "No." And he's like, "Well, you should think about it because you're not going to make the team as a player, as a
Right.
position player." So he started pitching, and he's like half-hearted throwing, and they're like, "You have to have more than that." And then he explained what happened. He's like, "Once again, if you don't do this, you're cut from the team." Then he let loose and 100, 101 miles per hour. The his curveball was rated one of the top 10 of all time by Baseball Digest. So Koufax, him right there as top
Wow.
curveballs. So you wonder like what would have happened if his arm didn't get damaged.
Right.
That's crazy. That's
Baseball is
crazy.
full of incredible stories. Like it just is. And I feel like there's this violence just under the surface, right? Where everything's happening, looks calm and collected, everything's fine. But under the surface, if you're paying attention, there's this roiling sort of viciousness. And it's super fascinating to me. But then you take it one step deeper, and that's what your book does. It tells you what's going on in the hearts of the players, what's going on in their heads, and that's a just a another layer of the game. It's so nuanced, and I think your book does a great job of bringing that up.
Well, thank you. Baseball is an incredibly competitive sport, but it's still a team sport.
Yeah.
And these players always balance that. I mean, you hit a home run, you're happy for yourself, even if it's a 9-0 game. But you have
Yeah.
to balance that with team needs as well. And that's what the good players do.
I love it. I love
Greg,
it.
I think you have a question that you can relate to more than me as far as writing about baseball.
Yeah.
And just because
We talk
you're
about.
he's doing this.
Yeah, can we just for a minute talk about how hard it is to write about baseball? And why is that true?
Because like everything else, everybody's going to judge what you do and what you write. Yeah. And there are times where you want to write a certain way or kind of point out certain things, and you have to understand that people have reasons for doing things, and things happen the way they happen. And you can't sugarcoat it sometimes. And that's what I enjoy writing these stories is I don't cover it up. I just kind of put it out there. And if it's received well, it's received well. Like Brian Milner, he had diabetes, and I think it affected his draft stock. Earl Weaver, the manager for the Orioles, after he had a big game against that team, said, well, we knew that and we liked him, but we were concerned he'd break down because he had diabetes. And it bothered me a lot more than it bothered him. He's like, oh, whatever, I don't care. But it bothered me. I'm like, this, he was managing, he was a great player. Why would it take away from his stock? So yeah. I just kind of put it out there, and he didn't bite on it. He didn't go negative. He didn't get upset. So I kind of let it go. But nowadays, I think he would be celebrated for playing like that, playing over that. Back then, it was more of a stigma, and he had to kind of get past it and hide it. So
yeah,
that's a long answer to your question.
No, I love it. I'm writing baseball stories right now too, and it's very, very hard. So I feel good hearing that. Yes, it's hard, but there's a way to do it, and it's just strip off the veneer, right? Just let it be what it is. That's just awesome. It's
very
great.
Cool.
Well, where's the best place for our baseball family to find your book?
The book Baseball's Great Expectations can be found on Amazon, like everything else, and we're pre-ordering until March 5th. So you can get it by March 5th. And Roman and Littlefield's a publisher, so it's on there. BarnesandNoble.com, Books a Million. And you can go right to my website, tdmonty0.com. And you can also follow me on Twitter and Facebook and everything else.
Yeah. Baseball family, if you don't know, buying it from the author direct is the best way to go. Like, let's be completely honest.
Absolutely. And I'll sign it and send it out. No problems.
That's awesome. Very cool. Well, I'll be pre-ordering mine. I've got a copy, but I want a physical signed copy. Super duh. Right. And we'll put a link in the description, baseball family, so you can go straight there and get yourself a copy as well. And is that the best place we can find Splendid Six as well?
Absolutely. Amazon is best place. That was a kind of like boutique vanity project I did, but it gave me a great opportunity to write and really flex and enjoy writing. And I did it, and here we go, book number two.
So cool. Very cool. Congratulations.
No, thank you so much. And I really enjoyed this talk.
Catch new episodes of the Baseball Together podcast every Tuesday.